Excuse me, said Magrat, there are dwarfs behind all that stuff, are there? Oh, yes, said the king. His tone suggested that this was merely a regrettable side effect of the disaster, because getting fresh dwarfs was only a matter of time, whereas decent gold-bearing rock was a finite resource. Granny Weatherwax inspected the rockfall critically. We shall have to have everyone out of here, she said. This is going to have to be private. I know how it is, said the king. Craft secrets, I expect. Something like that, said Granny. The king shooed the other dwarfs out of the tunnel, leaving the witches alone in the lantern light. A few bits of rock fell out of the ceiling. Said Granny.
You've gone and done it now, said Nanny Og.
Anything's possible if you set your mind to it, said Granny, vaguely.
Then you'd better set yours good and hard, Esme. If the Creator had meant us to shift rocks by witchcraft, he wouldn't have invented shovels. Knowing when to use a shovel is what being a witch is all about. And put down that wheelbarrow, Magrat. You don't know nothing about machinery.
All right, then, said Magrat. Why don't we try the wand? Granny Weatherwax snorted.
Heh, yeah? Whoever heard of a fairy godmother in a mine?
If I was stuck behind a load of rocks under a mountain, I'd want to hear of one, said Magrat hotly. Nanny Og nodded.
She's got a point there, Esme. There's no rule about where your fairy godmother.
I don't trust that wand, said Granny. It looks wizardly to me.
Oh, come on, said Magrat. Generations of fairy godmothers have used it. Granny flung her hands in the air.
Oh, all right, all right, all right, she snapped. Go ahead. Make yourself look daft.
Magrat took the wand out of her bag. She'd been dreading this moment. It was made of some sort of bone or ivory. Magrat hoped it wasn't ivory. There had been markings on it once, but generations of plump, fairly godmotherly hands had worn them almost smooth. Various gold and silver rings were set into the wand. Nowhere were there any instructions. Not so much as a rune or a sigil anywhere on its length indicated what you were supposed to do with it.
I think you're supposed to wave it, said Nanny Og. I'm pretty sure it's something like that.
Granny Weatherwax folded her arms.
That's not proper witching, she said.
Magrat gave the wand an experimental wave. Nothing happened.
Perhaps you have to say something, said Nanny.
Magrat looked panicky.
What do fairy godmothers say? She wailed.
Said Nanny.
Dunno.
Huh, said Granny. Nanny Og sighed.
Didn't Desiderata tell you anything?
Nothing. Nanny shrugged.
Just do your best, then, she said.
Magrat stared at the pile of rocks. She shut her eyes. She took a deep breath. She tried to make her mind a serene picture of cosmic harmony. It was all very well for monks to go on about cosmic harmony, she reflected, when they were nicely tucked away on snowy mountains with only yetis to worry about. They never tried seeking inner peace with Granny Weatherwax glaring at them. She waved the wand in a vague way and tried to put pumpkins out of her mind. She felt the air move. She heard Nanny gasp. She said,
"Has anything happened?"
After a while, Nanny Og said,
"Yeah, sort of. I hope they're hungry, that's all."
And Granny Weatherwax said, "That's fairy godmothering, is it?"
Magrat opened her eyes. There was still a heap, but it wasn't rock any more.
"There's a... wait for it. There's a bit of a squash in here," said Nanny.
Magrat opened her eyes wider.
"Still pumpkins? Bit of a squash."
"Squash," said Nanny, in case anyone hadn't got it. The top of the heap moved. A couple of small pumpkins rolled down almost to Magrat's feet, and a small dwarfish face appeared in the hole. It stared down at the witches. Eventually, Nanny Og said,
"Everything all right?"
The dwarf nodded. Its attention kept turning to the pile of pumpkins that filled the tunnel from floor to ceiling.
Yes, it said. "Is Dad there?"
"Dad?
The king?"
"Oh."
Nanny Og cupped her hands around her mouth and turned to face up the tunnel.
"Hey, king!"
The dwarfs appeared. They looked at the pumpkins too. The king stepped forward and stared up into the face of his son.
"Everything all right, son?"
"It's all right, Dad. No faulting or anything."
The king sagged with relief. Then, as an afterthought, he added, "Everyone all right?"
"Fine, Dad.
I was quite worried for a time there. Thought we might have a hit section of conglomerate or something."
"Just a patch of loose shale, Dad."
"Good." The king looked at the heap again. He scratched his beard. "Can't help noticing you seem to have struck pumpkin."
"I thought it was an odd kind of sandstone, Dad."
The king walked back to the witches. "Can you turn anything into anything?" he said hopefully. Nanny Og looked sideways at Magrat, who was still staring at the wand in a sort of shock.
"I think we only do pumpkins at the moment," she said cautiously.
The king looked a little disappointed.
"Well then," he said, "if there's anything I can do for you ladies, a cup of tea or something?"
Granny Weatherwax stepped forward.
"I was just thinking something like that myself," she said.
The king beamed.
"Only more expensive," said Granny.
The king stopped beaming. Nanny Og sidled up to Magrat, who was shaking the wand and staring at it.
"Very clever," she whispered. "Why do you think of pumpkins?"
"I didn't."
"Don't you know how to work it?"
"No, I thought you just had to, you know, want something to happen."
"There's probably more to it than just wishing," said Nanny, as sympathetically as possible. "There generally is."
Sometime around dawn, insofar as dawn happened in the mines, the witches were led to a river somewhere deep in the mountains, where a couple of barges were moored. A small boat was pulled up to a stone jetty.
"This'll take you right through the mountains," said the king. "I think it goes all the way to Genoa, to tell the truth."
He took a large basket off an attendant dwarf.
"And we've packed you some lovely food," he said.
"Are we going to go all the way in a boat?" said Magrat.
She gave the wand a few surreptitious flourishes.
"I'm not good at boats."
"Listen," said Granny, climbing aboard. "The river knows its way out of the mountains, which is more than we do. We can use the brooms later on, where the landscape's acting a bit more sensible."
"And we can have a bit of a rest," said Nanny, sitting back.
Magrat looked at the two older witches, who were making themselves comfortable in the stern, like a couple of hens settling down on a nest.
"Do you know how to row a boat?" she said.
"We don't have to," said Granny.
Magrat nodded gloomily. Then a tiny bit of self-assertion flashed a fin.
"I don't think I do, too," she ventured.
"That's all right," said Nanny. "If we sees you doing anything wrong, we'll be sure to tell you. Cheerio, your kingship."
Magrat sighed and picked up the oars.
"The flat bits go in the water," said Granny helpfully.
The dwarfs waved. The boat drifted out into midstream, moving slowly in a circle of lantern light. Magrat found that all she really had to do was keep it pointing the right way in the current. She heard Nanny say,
"Beats me why they're always putting invisible runes on their doors. I mean, you pay some wizard to put invisible runes on your door, and how do you know you've got value for money?"
She heard Granny say, "No problem there. If you can't see 'em, you know you've got a proper invisible rune."
She heard Nanny say,
"Ah, that'd be it. Right. Let's see what we've got for lunch."
There was a rustling noise.
"Well, well, well."
"What is it, Gitter?"
"Pumpkin."
"Pumpkin what?"
"Pumpkin nothing. Just pumpkin pumpkin."
"Well, I suppose they've got a lot of pumpkin," said Magrat. "You know how it is at the end of the summer. There's always so much in the garden. I'm always at my wit's end to think of new types of chutney and pickles to use it all up."
In the dim light, she could see Granny's face, which seemed to be suggesting that if Magrat was at her wit's end, it was a short stroll.
"I," said Granny, "have never made a pickle in my life."
"But you like pickles," said Magrat.
Witches and pickles went together like... She hesitated before the stomach-curdling addition of peaches and cream, and mentally substituted things that went together very well. The sight of Nanny Og's single remaining tooth at work on a pickled onion could bring tears to the eyes.
"I likes 'em fine," said Granny. "I gets 'em given to me."
"You know," said Granny, investigating the recesses of the basket, "whenever I deals with dwarfs, the phrase duck's arse swims across me mind."
"Mean little devils. You should see the prices they tries to charge me when I takes my broom to be repaired," said Granny.
"Yes, but you never pay," said Magrat.
"That's not the point," said Granny Weatherwax. "They shouldn't be allowed to charge that sort of money. That's thieving, that is."
"I don't see how it can be thieving if you don't pay anyway," Magrat persisted.
"I never pay for anything," said Granny. "People never let me pay. I can't help it if people give me things the whole time, can I? When I walk down the street, people are always running out with cakes they've just baked, and fresh beer, and old clothes that have hardly been worn at all. 'Oh, Mistress Weatherwax, pray take this basket of eggs,' they say. People are always very kind. Treat people right, and they'll treat you right. It's respect. Not having to pay," she finished sternly, "is what being a witch is all about."
"Here, what's this?" said Nanny, pulling out a small packet. She unwrapped the paper and revealed several hard brown discs.
"My word," said Granny Weatherwax, "I take it all back. That's the famous dwarf bread, that is. They don't give that to just anyone."
Nanny tapped it on the edge of the boat. It made a noise very similar to the kind of noise you get when a wooden ruler is held over the edge of a desk and plucked. A sort of hollow boing-oing-oing sound.
"They say it never goes stale, even if you stores it for years," said Granny.
"It'd keep you going for days and days," said Nanny Og.
Magrat reached across, took one of the flat loaves, tried to break it, and gave up.
"You're supposed to eat it," she said.
"Oh, I don't think it's for eating," said Nanny. "It's more for sort of,
keeping you going," said Granny. "They say that..."
She stopped. Above the noise of the river and the occasional drip of water from the ceiling they could all hear, now the steady slosh-slosh of another craft heading towards them.
"Someone's following us," hissed Magrat.
Two pale glows appeared at the edge of the lamplight. Eventually they turned out to be the eyes of a small grey creature, vaguely frog-like, paddling towards them on a log. It reached the boat. Long, clammy fingers grabbed the side, and a lugubrious face rose level with Nanny Og's.
"Hello," it said. "It's my birthday."
All three of them stared at it for a while. Then Granny Weatherwax picked up an oar and hit it firmly over the head. There was a splash and a distant cursing.
"Horrible little bugger," said Granny as they rowed on. "Looked like a troublemaker to me."
"Yeah," said Nanny Og. "It's the slimy ones you have to watch out for."
"I wonder what he wanted," said Magrat.
After half an hour, the boat drifted out through a cave mouth and into a narrow gorge between cliffs. Ice glistened on the walls, and there were drifts of snow on some of the outcrops. Nanny Og looked around guilelessly, and then fumbled somewhere in the depths of her miniskirts and produced a small bottle. There was a glugging noise.
"I bet there's a fine echo here," she said after a while. "Oh, no, you don't," said Granny firmly.
"Don't what?"
"Don't sing that song."
"Pardon, Esme?"
"I ain't going," said Granny, "if you insists on singing that song."
"What song would that be?"
said Nanny innocently.
"You know the song to whom I am referring," said Granny icily. "You always get drunk and let me down and sing it."
"Can't recall any song like that, Esme," said Nanny Og meekly.
"The one," said Granny, "about the rodent that can't ever be persuaded to care about anything."
"Oh," said Nanny, beaming as light dawned. "You mean the hedgehog can never be, but..."
"That's the one."
"But it's traditional," said Nanny.
"Anyway, in foreign parts, people won't know what the words mean."
"They will the way you sings them," said Granny. "The way you sings them, creatures what lives on the bottoms of ponds know what they mean."
Magrat looked over the side of the boat. Here and there, ripples were edged with white. The current was running a bit faster, and there were lumps of ice in it.
"It's only a folk song, Esme," said Nanny Og.
"Heh," said Granny Weatherwax. "I should just say it is a folk song. I knows all about folk songs. Heh, you think you're listening to a nice song about cuckoos and fiddlers and nightingales and whatnot, and then it turns out to be about something else entirely," she added darkly. "You can't trust folk songs. They always sneak up on you."
Magrat fended them off a rock, and eddy spun them around slowly.
"I know one about two little bluebirds," said Nanny Og.
Said Magrat.
"They may start out by being bluebirds, but I bet they ends up some kind of metaphor," said Granny.
Granny, said Magrat.
"It was bad enough Magrat telling me about maypoles and what's behind 'em," said Granny. She added wistfully, I used to enjoy looking at a maypole of a spring morning.
I think the river's getting a bit sort of rough, said Magrat.
I don't see why people can't just let things be, said Granny.
I mean, really, quite rough, really, said Magrat, pushing them away from a jagged rock.
She's right, you know, said Nanny Og. It's a bit on the choppy side.
Granny looked over Magrat's shoulder at the river ahead. It had a cut-off look, such as might be associated with, for example, an imminent waterfall. The boat was now surging along. There was a muted roar.
They never said anything about a waterfall, she said.
I expect they thought we'd find out for ourselves, said Nanny Og, gathering up her possessions and hauling Grebo out of the bottom of the boat by the scruff of his neck.
Very sparing with information, your average dwarf. Thank goodness witches float. Anyway, they know we've got the brooms.
You've got brooms, said Granny Weatherwax. How am I supposed to get mine started in a boat? Can't run up and down, can I? And stop moving about like that, you'll have us all over.
Get your foot out the way, Esme.
The boat rocked violently. Magrat rose to the occasion. She pulled out the wand just as a wavelet washed over the boat.
Don't worry, she said. I'll use the wand. I think I've got the hang of it now.
No!
Screamed Granny Weatherwax and Nanny Og together. There was a large, damp noise. The boat changed shape. It also changed colour. It became a cheery sort of orange.
Pumpkins! Screamed Nanny Og as she was gently tipped into the water. More bloody pumpkins!
Lilith sat back. The ice around the river hadn't been that good as a mirror, but it had been good enough. Well, a wishy-washy, overgrown girl, more suitable to the attentions of a fairy godmother than to being one, and a little old washerwoman type who got drunk and sang songs, and a wand the stupid girl didn't know how to use. It was annoying. More than that, it was demeaning. Surely Desiderata and Mrs. Goggle could have achieved something better than this. You derived status by the strength of your enemies. Of course, there was her. After all this time? Of course, she approved of that, because there would have to be three of them. Three was an important number for stories. Three wishes, three princes, three billy goats, three guesses, three witches. The maiden, the mother, and the other one. That was one of the oldest stories of all. Esme Weatherwax had never understood stories. She'd never understood how real reflections were. If she had, she'd probably have been ruling the world by now.
You're always looking in mirrors, said a petulant voice. I hate it when you're always looking in mirrors.
The Duke sprawled in a chair in one corner, all black silk and well-turned legs. Lilith would not normally allow anyone inside the nest of mirrors, but it was technically his castle. Besides, he was too vain and stupid to know what was going on. She'd seen to that. At least, she thought she had. Lately, he seemed to be picking things up.
I don't know why you have to do that, he whined. I thought magic was just a matter of pointing and going whoosh.
Lilith picked up her hat and glanced at a mirror as she adjusted it.
This way's safer, she said. It's self-contained. When you use mirror magic, you don't have to rely on anyone except yourself. That's why no one's ever conquered the whole world with magic, yet. They try to take it from other places, and there's always a price. But with mirrors, you're beholden to no one but your own soul.
She lowered the veil from the hat brim. She preferred the privacy of a veil outside the security of the mirrors.
I hate mirrors, muttered the Duke.
That's because they tell you the truth, my lad.
It's cruel magic, then.
Lilith tweaked the veil into a fetching shape.
Oh, yes. With mirrors, all the power is your own. There's nowhere else it can come from, she said.
The Swamp Woman gets it from the swamp, said the Duke.
And it'll claim her one day. She doesn't understand what she's doing.
And you do?
She felt a pang of pride. He was actually resenting her. She really had done a good job there.
I understand stories, she said. That's all I need.
But you haven't brought me the girl, said the Duke.
You promised me the girl, and then it'll all be over, and I can sleep in a real bed, and I won't need any more reflecting magic.
But even a good job can go too far.
You've had your fill of magic, said Lilith sweetly. You'd like me to stop? It would be the easiest thing in the world. I found you in the gutter. Would you like me to send you back?
His face became a mask of panic.
I didn't mean that. I just meant, well, then everything would be real. Just one kiss, you said. I can't see why that's so hard to arrange.
The right kiss at the right time, said Lilith. It has to be at the right time, otherwise it won't work.
She smiled. He was trembling, partly out of lust, mainly out of terror, and slightly out of heredity.
Don't worry, she said. It can't not happen.
And these witches you showed me?
They're just part of the story. Don't worry about them. The story will just absorb them, and you'll get her because of stories. Won't that be nice?
And now shall we go? I expect you've got some ruling to do. He picked up the inflection. It was an order. He stood up, extended an arm to take hers, and together they went down to the palace's audience chamber. Lilith was proud of the Duke. Of course, there was his embarrassing little nocturnal problem, because his morphic field weakened when he slept, but that wasn't yet a major difficulty. And there was the trouble with mirrors, which showed him as he really was. But that was easily overcome by banning all mirrors save hers. And then there were his eyes. She couldn't do anything about the eyes. There was practically no magic that can do anything about someone's eyes. All she'd been able to come up with there were the smoked glasses. Even so, he was a triumph. And he was so grateful. She'd been good for him. She'd made a man of him for a start. Some way downriver from the waterfall, which was the second highest anywhere on the disc and had been discovered in the year of the revolving crab by the noted explorer Guy de Yo-Yo. Of course, lots of dwarfs, trolls, native people, trappers, hunters, and the merely badly lost had discovered it on an almost daily basis for thousands of years, but they weren't explorers and didn't count. Granny Weatherwax sat in front of a small fire with a towel around her shoulders and steamed.
Still, look on the bright side, said Nanny Og. At least I was holding my broom and you at the same time, and Magrat had hers. Otherwise we'd all be looking at the waterfall from underneath.
Oh, good. A silver lining, said Granny, her eyes glinting evilly.
Bit of an adventure, really, said Nanny, grinning encouragingly. One day we'll look back on this and laugh.
Oh, good, said Granny.
Nanny dabbed at the claw marks on her arm. Grebo, with a cat's true instinct for self-preservation, had clawed his way up his mistress and taken a flying leap to safety from the top of her head. Now he was curled up by the fire, dreaming cat dreams. A shadow passed over them. It was Magrat, who had been combing the riverbanks.
I think I've got nearly everything, she said as she landed. Here's Granny's broomstick and, oh yes, the wand.
She gave a brave little smile. Little pumpkins were bobbing to the surface. That's how I found it.
My word, that was lucky, said Nanny Og encouragingly. Hear that, Esme? We shan't be wanting for food at any rate. And I found the basket with the dwarf bread in it, said Magrat, although I'm afraid it might be spoilt.
It won't be.
Take it from me, said Nanny Og. You can't spoil dwarf bread.
Well, well, she said, sitting down again, we've got quite a little picnic, haven't we? And a nice bright fire, and a nice place to sit, and I'm sure there's lots of poor people in the places like Hawondaland and such like who'd give anything to be here right now.
If you don't stop being so cheerful, Gither Og, I shall give you such a ding around the ear with the flat of my hand, said Granny Weatherwax.
You sure you're not catching a chill? Said Nanny Og.
I'm drying out, said Granny Weatherwax, from the inside.
Look, I'm really sorry, said Magrat. I said I was sorry.
Not that she was quite certain what for, she told herself. The boat wasn't her idea. She hadn't put the waterfall there. She hadn't even been in a position to see it coming. She'd turned the boat into a pumpkin, but she hadn't meant to. It could have happened to anyone. I managed to save Desiderata's notebooks too, she said.
Well, that's a blessing, said Naniog. Now we know where we're lost.
She looked around. They were through the worst of the mountains, but there were still peaks around the high meadows stretching to the snow line. From somewhere in the distance came the clonking of goat bells. Magrat unfolded a map. It was creased, damp, and the pencil had run. She pointed cautiously to a smudged area.
I think we're here, she said. My word, said Naniog, whose grasp of the principles of cartography was even shakier than Granny's. Amazing how we can all fit on that little bit of paper.
I think perhaps it would be a good idea at the moment if we just followed the river, said Magrat, without in any way going on it, she added quickly.
I suppose you didn't find my bag, said Granny Weatherwax. He'd had personal items in.
Probably sank like a stone, said Naniog.
Granny Weatherwax stood up like a general who's just had news that his army has come second.
Come on, she said. Where to next, then?
What was next was forest, dark and ferociously coniferous. The witches flew over it in silence. There were occasional isolated cottages half hidden in the trees. Here and there a crag loomed over the Sylvanian gloom, shrouded in mist even in mid-afternoon. Once or twice they flew past castles, if that's what you could call them. They didn't look built, more extruded from the landscape. It was the kind of landscape that had a particular type of story attached to it, featuring wolves and garlic and frightened women. A dark and thirsty story, a story that flapped wings against the moon.
"Der Flabbergast," muttered Nanny.
"What's that?" said Magrat.
"It's foreign for a bat."
"I've always liked bats," said Magrat, "in general." The witches found that by unspoken agreement they were flying closer together.
"I'm getting hungry," said Granny Weatherwax, "and don't no one mention pumpkin."
"There's dwarf bread," said Nanny.
"There's always the dwarf bread," said Granny. "I fancy something cooked this year, thank you all the same."
They flew past another castle, occupying the entire summit of a crag.
"What we need is a nice little town or something," said Magrat.
"But the one down there will have to do," said Granny.
They looked down at it. It wasn't so much a town as a huddle of houses clustering together against the trees. It looked as cheerless as an empty hearth, but the shadows of the mountains were already speeding across the forest, and something about the landscape tacitly discouraged nighttime flying.
"Can't see many people about," said Granny.
"Maybe they turn in early in these parts," said Naniog.
"It's hardly even sunset," said Magrat. "Perhaps we ought to go up to that castle." They all looked at the castle.
"No," said Granny slowly, speaking for all of them. "We know our place."
So they landed instead, in what was presumably the town square. A dog barked somewhere behind the buildings. A shutter banged closed.
"Very friendly," said Granny.
She walked over to a larger building that had a sign unreadable under the grime over the door. She gave the woodwork a couple of thumps.
"Open up," she said.
"No, no, you don't say that," said Magrat.
She shouldered her way past and tapped on the door.
"Excuse me, bona fide travellers."
"Bona what?" said Nanny.
"That's what you need to say," said Magrat. "Any inn has got to open up for bona fide travellers and give them succour."
"Has it?" said Nanny, with interest. "That sounds like a thing worth knowing."
The door remained shut.
"Let me have a go," said Nanny. "I know some foreign lingo."
She hammered on the door.
"Oh, penny voo, Gunga Din, chop chop pretty damn quick," she said.
Granny Weatherwax listened carefully.
"That's speaking foreign, is it?" "My grandson Shane is a sailor," said Naniog. "You'd be amazed the words he learns about foreign parts." "I expects I would," said Granny, "and I hopes they works better for him."
She thumped on the door again, and this time it opened very slowly. A pale face peered around it.
"Excuse me," Magrat began.
Granny pushed the door open. The face's owner had been leaning on it. They could hear the scrape of his boots over the floor as he was shoved gently backwards.
"Blessings be on this house," Granny said perfunctorily.
It was always a good opening remark for a witch.
It concentrated people's minds on what other things might be on this house, and reminded them about any fresh cakes, newly baked bread, or bundles of useful old clothing that might have temporarily escaped their minds. It looked like one of the other things had been on this house already.